New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing.
Hello, hello, listeners, and welcome to Toolbox Talks at the Siteshed. My name is Matt Jones, and I am the facilitator, the man with the mic, so to speak. And you are joining us today with my co-host, Shane Connolly, and we are conducting a series on occupational health and safety made simple. That's right. It's OHS made simple. That's the topic of the series. Now, whether or not you're joining us for episode 1, 2, or 3, I'm sure you're going to get a lot out of this. So if you've missed any of the previous episodes, make sure you go back and check them out. Shane is an absolute expert in this field, and he is from a company called Tradie Safe, and they basically help businesses implement occupational health and safety documentation through the majesty of the cloud. So it's a three-part series. The first one, we're learning a bit about OHS. The second one, we're talking about capturing and recording OHS documentation. And then in the final episode, we're talking about where the future of occupational health and safety is going. So it's a really good series. It's very applicable, I would say, to any of our listeners, so make sure you tune in, and if you enjoy it, leave us some comments in the show notes or in iTunes, Stitcher, and or SoundCloud. Thank you.
Giving tradies and contractors around the globe the tools to run a modern business. You're listening to Toolbox Talks from the Siteshed. Now here's your host, Matt Jones.
So, welcome back to Toolbox Talks on the Siteshed. And in this episode, we are kicking off the first part of a three-part series with Shane Connolly from Tradie Safe, and we're talking about OHS. Actually, the topic of the series is OHS Made Simple. Shane is a master in occupational health and safety, and I've invited him on the show because, you know, it's one of those things that it certainly is not what we consider a sexy topic, but by golly, are we going to try and make it sexy, right, Shane?
And we're trying to make it simple as well. But it's definitely not sexy, and people don't generally like talking about it, but it is very important.
Now, just for the listeners out there, Shane, just a quick plug for Tradie Safe. Tradie Safe is a occupational health and safety platform. Do you just want to talk a little bit about that?
So basically what we do is try to take something that can be very difficult for tradies and make it as simple as possible and bring it into the digital world. So makes it completely paperless if you want to go that way, and you can take it with you on your iPad, your phone, that sort of thing. So we help you do the whole lot, set it up, get you running, and make sure that you're compliant.
Beautiful. Are we talking things like safe work method statements and toolbox talks and all this kind? Are they the kind of documents we're referring to typically?
All of that kind of information, your policies, procedures, inspections, all the whole lot.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, Shane. Well, look, thanks for joining us in this series. We very much appreciate both your time and your expertise. And so we've decided to break this series down into three parts so that we're not overcomplicating anything in particular. We typically like to do that in the Siteshed because it just drives a bit of a clear message. First of all, we're just going to talk about OHS. And then in the second episode, we're going to talk about how to capture and record OHS information and documentation. And then in the final episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of OHS and where it's headed. So, I suppose diving into the first episode there, well, actually, let's talk about some of the pain points, first of all. So, typically, I mean, you see this day to day. I don't see it as often as you do. However, what are some of the pain points or the problems that people would come to you? What are some of the problems that they're experiencing when they do come to you?
Most of the time, people are just aren't sure exactly what they're supposed to do and what they're not supposed to do for a start. It's when you start a business, there's not really a handbook that anyone gives you and tells you what you need to do to be compliant. And that's really the biggest problem that I see. Some of the people who have a bit of an idea of what they need to do haven't got any way to fill in the gaps. So they might have a policy, but they don't have some procedures, and they're not doing toolbox talks, or, you know, they've got their swims, but that's really all they've got. So it's really people just don't quite know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. I know I've worked in organizations before, you know, where they didn't put such a large emphasis on things like toolbox talks because they found that you know, or even things like tagging leads and doing things like this, they found that people would become so dependent on going and checking that the lead had a tag on it that they would neglect to actually check the lead before they use it.
Safety can be a strange thing sometimes. and it's important too to separate safety from compliance,
because right.
there are two different things that you're talking about, really. The law requires you to be compliant with the things that it sets out. Being safe on your work site isn't about necessarily having those leads tagged or the bits of paper, so to speak, that you have. That comes back to the communication side of things. So there are two different parts. We help you with both, but it's important to know that being compliant is the first step, and then the next level you go to is the real safety.
Yeah, well, I suppose many would argue that it might be the reverse order. It's probably more important to make sure that you're safe.
Oh, it's definitely. It's so much easier to fill in the paperwork gaps than it is to fill in the culture of your business, you know.
Yeah.
Almost all the tradies that we work with are already doing most of the right stuff. They just don't have any of the proof that they're doing it.
Interesting.
And that's usually the biggest problem. So, because compliance is like the tax man. It doesn't exist if you don't have a receipt.
So, who's checking up on it? Who's making sure they're compliant?
Well, there's no one comes around and checks every business. Each state has WorkSafe or Safe Work part of their regulations, and they have regulators who go out and do spot inspections and generally follow up on any serious incidents and things like that. And obviously, that's when people get found out. When something goes wrong, they start digging into your business. And if you don't have all those boxes ticked, that's when you can find yourself in hot water.
Yeah, cool. Well, look, I suppose, you know, after this series, I'm hoping that the listeners can leave with a bit of an understanding as to, you know, what maybe they need to be doing as a minimum for their, from an OH&S point of view. I'd like to, I suppose, we need to establish, I suppose, why it should be a priority for them. So if we can communicate, you know, why they need to have an WHS, OH&S employed into their business. And then I suppose, you know, how you can do all this stuff as pain-free and as carefree as possible. I know when I was working on site, it was, I felt like sometimes all I would be doing at the end of the, you know, when I was running job sites and projects, all I would be doing is paperwork and filling out, you know, safe work method statements and filling out tool registers and danger reports and just doing all this stuff. I felt like I never got any work done. I suppose that's why you have a business, right?
Well, that's part of it, yeah. And so part of what people have is that they, because they're not 100% sure what they're supposed to be doing, sometimes they'll overcompensate by trying to throw too much at it. In most of my clients, for example, wouldn't spend more than 20 minutes a week working on their compliance, because once you get your systems in place and everything's working, that's really what sort of time frame you should be spending.
Yeah. When did this whole OH&S thing really start to take off?
Well, actually, when I did my master's, I did research on this, and it actually goes back hundreds of years, but the real modern form didn't start until in the 70s when legislation came in.
Unions?
Well, it's partly to do with unions. I mean, how it used to work is that it was all on the worker, on the employer, sorry, to make sure that everything was correct. And so now it's a much more balanced approach. So the employer has an obligation. But the employee has an obligation as well. So it's a much more fair system now than what it ever used to be. But it has been around a long time, actually. And I was surprised, even having worked in the industry, to find out how far back safety legislation actually goes.
Yep. So, okay, what is OH&S? What are we talking about here?
So you're talking about, the way I explain it to people at home, you could come to my house and find me on the roof in my thongs fixing the air conditioner. At home, there's no obligation. I can set the amount of risk that I take. That's up to me. I go water skiing, snowboarding, whatever I do, that's all up to me. When you come to work, you fall under the occupational health and safety legislation, or the work health and safety legislation now in some states. So, and that sets those obligations. So it's not as simple as you decide what you're allowed to do. The law then sets a minimum standard, and that's really what you're talking about with OH&S, is what that minimum standard is.
Okay, so if I work for myself, what's the difference between me getting up on the roof in my sandals and the reason I say sandals and not thongs is because we have a lot of American listeners.
Okay.
And when they heard you talking about you being on the roof in your thong, I can imagine they were picturing something completely different.
They just don't look anymore.
So for all of our American and Canadian listeners out there, when we refer to thongs in Australia, we're actually talking about flip-flops.
Yes.
Anyway, so sorry for the segue. When we talk about, you know, use that as an example, okay, you're getting up on your roof in your flip-flops to repair your air conditioning, you're doing it at home. What's the difference between doing that at home and then where if you work for yourself and you were doing it at work?
Well, there's two things. I mean, self-employed, like if you're a sole trader, for example, that is a little bit different. You still have obligations to the public, to the people who you're doing the work for, and that sort of thing. So, and obviously, you still can be found guilty of the same breaches of regulation that as anyone else can, whether you're working for a multinational company or whether you're working for yourself. It's just that when you have employees, it gets a little bit more complicated and your requirements get a little bit higher. That's where things become, you know, everyone starts out being the tradie who's just sole trader and he's doing work and then gets busier and you put people on and that's when it gets a little bit more complicated.
So OH&S is there also to protect the public, like public liability?
Well, it's there to protect if you're working, you know, in the front yard of someone's house and one of your nails from your nail gun flies across the street and hits someone in the head. Obviously, people need to be protected from that possibility as well. So it kind of encompasses, and in the legislation it says you have an obligation to your employers, to your employee, and to the general public.
Yeah.
So it's pretty clear that, you know, you need to take those things into account when you set up, especially in a public place.
What if the nail from the nail gun only hit them in, say, the shoulder?
Well, that would be much more fortunate. But it's still, it's you know, there are in the UK, there was a very good example of some railing that fell off a four-story building and happened to kill somebody. And it created a whole series of events that meant that this was many years ago, that this is where that legislation came from, that you need to protect the public as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, strange things happen on work sites, and I'm sure we've all seen odd things that the public will do. You know, you have to take the lowest common denominator into account when you set up around public places.
Yep. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, like typically, so from a worker's point of view, compliance has always been a bit of a pain. You know, it's been a bit of a time suck. It's been a drag. So why is it such a pain in the neck? Is it because there's so much work that needs to be done, because there's so many things that need to be documented, or is it just because we don't really know how to do it properly?
I think it's two things. I think it's what you said, secondly, the fact that most people are not really sure what they're supposed to do, and the fact that it gets a lot of bad press. You know, it's not, half the people have spent an hour talking to me, usually they come away with a different point of view because I guess I'm not your typical safety person. I think that safety should be simple. You know, it shouldn't be a complicated process. It's there to save your life. You know, that's the bottom line. And if people do it the way they need to do it, then it shouldn't really be a burden. You don't consider lodging your tax return a burden because you're hopeful that you're going to get a return from it. And so if you're doing your safety stuff right, your return is that you get to go home every night. And so that shouldn't really be a burden for people.
Yeah, okay.
It's just it's a thought, it's a way to think about things, yep. You know. And so, and because of all the bad press that safety gets and occupational health and safety, it's blamed for many things, but it actually does a lot more good than it does bad.
Okay, so I mean, what are some of the things that we do need to comply for? How do we go about this?
So some of the basic things you need as a business, you need a policy for workplace health and safety. You need some procedures around how you expect things to be done. You need to talk to your workers. So you need to have those toolbox talks and, you know, hopefully you can get some feedback from them. That's usually when they all like to shut up though. You need to manage the risk in your workplace. There's a whole variety of different ways you can do that, but you need to have some form of risk management. So whether that's your safe work method statements or job safety analysis, there's 20 different names for those sorts of things, but you need to have some way to manage the risks. And they're the handful of basic things that each business should really have in place.
Okay, cool. And look, we won't dive into, I suppose, how we go about this, because the next episode we're going to talk about how you actually capture this information and the best way to record it. But will that also tie in, I suppose, to, well, okay, let's say, without the capturing side of things, how do we make it simple? Like, how do we go about, do you teach your, you know, your clients to, you know, how to set like a schedule into their agenda where they can, you know, set aside a certain amount of time to do this kind of thing? Or what do you teach people?
Well, the first thing you have to work out really is how at risk risk the business is. So if you're working at, you know, if you're always working at heights or you're in confined space or you do some stuff that's generally considered to be more dangerous, then you need to put a little bit more work into your process. But if you're a plumber that does, you know, residential homes and fixes pipes and puts your taps in and stuff like that, obviously you need to spend less time because it's not a high risk. Other than crazy people who live in the houses, that's about the highest risk you're going to face. So yeah. The first thing you have to do really is work out where you sit on that scale, and that dictates how much time you put into it. If you're a low-risk business, then you know there's a lot of stuff that you don't need to do on a daily basis. So you can sort of work that through and get yourself to a point where you have to have a toolbox once a month instead of once a week, or you know, that's how you work it out. It just takes a bit of thought process behind it.
But where, I mean, that's a bit of a grey area, isn't it? I mean, where do you draw the line between, you know, somebody that, you know, okay, I do tap washers. Do I need to create a safe work method statement for this tap washer I'm reseating? You know, up to, I mean, obviously, if you're going to be working at heights or, you know, working with power tools or, you know, if you're using heat or anything like that, then, you know, that kind of makes sense. But where do you draw the line between what does require this level of certification and what doesn't?
So safe work method statements are a bit of a contentious thing for me. They were created originally for high risk construction work. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really what they should be used for. You should never have a SWIMS for a power tool, for example.
Right.
That's never what they were designed to do. They're for just for high risk things. There are much more simple forms of risk management that you can use, like a take five or something like that, for low risk jobs, like, you know, changing the taps in a house or something. So that's the way you should approach it.
Is it not though? I mean, I know I've experienced firsthand. It almost seems like it's a way that, you know, when you're working on the site, say a builder's site, it's a way that they, you know, think they're covering their behinds by making you fill out SWIMS for, you know, for absolutely everything you do. Is that the case?
Poor understanding of what is required. And I get this from some of my clients too. They work for big companies like your Woolworths or your Coles, and they require that no matter what you come on site for, that you hand in a SWIMS so that they can be covered. So there are occasions when you get that no matter what the job you're doing. And I say to my clients, if that's what your client requires and that's what they're happy to pay for, then be happy to supply that paperwork. But in your normal business, then, you know, that's where we get into the discussion about what is really required. And we just make sure that you're doing the minimum that you have to do to be safe.
So what if I choose not to comply?
Well, that's always an option. And I actually know people who do that, sadly enough. It's really a bit like gambling. Because you don't know if something's going to affect your business. You don't know if one of your employees is going to chop his hand off or, I mean, you hope, obviously, but if that ever happens to you, then you're the next case that makes the news headlines. And I think all states now have $1 million plus fines for directors of companies that don't follow the rules.
So, okay, in that scenario, say, you know, an employee chops his hand off, are they going to come to me and say, right, show me your safe work method statement, and then if I don't have one, then I'll get in trouble, but if I do have one, I won't?
Well, they're going to come to you and probably ask for that first, and then they're going to ask for your training records, then they're going to ask for your procedures and policies, and then they're going to ask for your inductions, and then they're going to ask for a whole heap of other stuff probably. And what happens at the end of that is that they will weigh up whether you were going in the right direction as a company or whether you completely disregarded any of the requirements, or usually it falls somewhere in between for most companies. But yeah, it's not a simple process, but they will dig deep.
And is it a case of them typically, I mean, your experience, are they digging so deep they just keep digging until they find something to bury you on, or are they sort of on your side?
No, the way it tends to work is it's about your intention as a company. So if your intention is to blatantly disregard the laws and just do what you feel like doing, they will come after you with all guns blazing. If they can see that you're working hard and you've tried to put the right things in place and you're doing what you need to do, then obviously they will work with you. You might still end up with a fine, but it might be a $10,000 fine instead of a $200,000 fine. And that's really what the difference will be.
So in scenarios, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, the company I used to work for, they refused to, they went through it. Obviously, they went through the stage where we would tag absolutely everything. Then they went through the stage where they stopped because they found that people, as I mentioned, you know, they would look at the tag on the lead, they would see that it's current, and they wouldn't see the giant nick that's been taken in the side of the lead, and they just plug it in and off they go. Whereas if it doesn't have a tag, they're more inclined to actually search the lead and check it.
Yes, which is why you have procedures and training. I mean, part of the – because that's right. It's called safety blindness, that particular disease, because people expect someone else to tell them what they're supposed to do. And so – and you never want to get to that point, really, as a business. And some of the big businesses like your – I won't name any names, but some of the really big companies in Australia have that problem in a big way, because they stop people from using their common sense.
Right.
And safety and common sense aren't two things that shouldn't go side by side. They are. You should always have common sense when it comes to safety.
No, absolutely. But I just question, you know, perhaps with all of this, you know, all this stuff we're doing, if it's making us use less common sense.
I personally, everyone I work with, I encourage common sense at every turn, because at the end of the day, you don't want drones working out there as part of your business. You want that person to be thinking about what they're doing and feeding that information back to you, especially when you stop being out on the job front all the time. You want them to be thinking for themselves. So if all of the stuff you should do with safety should encourage it. There are some things that you have to do as a compliance measure, like your testing and tagging, but you should always be following that up with making sure that they are thinking for themselves as well,
yep.
Which is not always easy.
All right. Well, look, I think that's a pretty good overview of that topic. Have you think we've missed anything there in that specific episode?
No, I think that sort of gives people a bit of an overview. My big thing with safety is not to, it can be a scary topic, but not to be scared by it. You know, there are resources out there. There are places like TradeSafe that can help you with those sorts of things. So you shouldn't be afraid that some people get a bit overwhelmed and they just throw their hands up and, you know, stick their head in the sand. So it's really important that you don't do that part.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I suppose one of the takeaways from me was, you know, not to confuse safety with compliance. I think that's something that could certainly be a lot of people would maybe neglect. And obviously, common sense. I mean, there's no replacement for common sense. So, you know, don't.
Exactly.
Just because.
And I've worked for compliant companies who aren't safe, and I've worked for safe companies who aren't necessarily compliant. So the two aren't mutually exclusive.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, look, I think we'll wrap this episode up, and then we're going to come back in the following episode, and we're going to be talking about a little bit about how to capture and record OH&S documentation. And I suppose with the SiteShed has a bit of a, you know, not a huge, I suppose a lot of what we talk about is technology-based, so I imagine you'll have some good input there on some, maybe some cloud solutions and things that might be able to help simplify the process.
Certainly do.
All right, cool. Well, let's wrap this episode up, and we will come back with the following episode in a short while. Stay tuned. So if you haven't already, head across to thesiteshed.com and register for our Toolbox Talks, where you'll be regularly sent great episodes just like this straight to your inbox, so you'll never miss one. If you want to join the community, you can head across to thesiteshed.com/members, where for a small monthly fee, you'll get access to regularly updated training material, as well as access to our forum, where you can mingle and collaborate with trade-based business owners just like you from all over the world. If you're enjoying this podcast, please head across to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We greatly appreciate it, and it helps us spread the word and reach the masses. Likewise, if you know anyone that might benefit from the content we create, then please go ahead and share this with them.
You've been listening to Toolbox Talks by The SiteShed. For more great content just like this, head across to thesiteshed.com and join the amazing community of savvy trade-based business owners.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Please, if you did, head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Anyway, if you are a project-based trade business and you work in solar or bathroom renovations or kitchen renovations or roofing or something along those lines, and you would like to see some of the results that we've been showcasing in our marketing on for your business, thousands of percent return on ad spend, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 13,000% return on ad spend, please head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcasts. That's tradie.wiki/pod for podcasts.
It will be well worth the conversation, and I can't wait to chat with you. Ciao.